The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid, wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Welcome, everybody, to the Pick Six Podcast.
I can't tell if that's Will or Jamie.
No, that was from Will Brinson. I am Ryan Wilson. Will Brinson is not with us right now. He is still alive, but he is not with us in person. But it's me, Jamie Eisenberg, Brady Quinn, and Pete Prisco doing the Pick Six Podcast from Indianapolis at the Combine Tuesday. Day one is in the books. We're going to talk about Joe Burrow's tiny hands, if that means anything. Joe Burrow's interest in the Cincinnati Bengals. He spoke about that earlier today and what to watch on the offensive side of the ball. First things first, Jamie, I'll talk about, I'll ask you in terms of any sort of offensive takeaways you had from what you saw today in Indianapolis as it relates to fantasy.
I think it's, first of all, you didn't see anything.
Right.
That's the thing. There's nothing really to see. It's more the conversations I think you're getting from, for me at least, it's from the coaches and the GMs, you know, not so much the incoming rookies, because for fantasy it doesn't really matter until these guys get on actual rosters. But, you know, to hear still some of the same concerns about Todd Gurley, to hear that Greg Olsen, what his role is going to be with Seattle from Pete Carroll, you know, the fact that the Giants, for whatever reason, aren't committing to Daniel Jones. You know, a lot of it is just, you know, some of the same conversations that you've heard coming into the combine, and then, you know, it's a lot of the coach speak that's coming out of the combine. You know, until we get past the draft and free agency, a lot of what we think is going to happen for fantasy really doesn't matter right now. It's going to be what these rosters get reshaped and how those things change.
Okay, but we can find out what Joe Burrow's going to do in fantasy.
Sure.
Because we know where he's going.
Can I say this real quick?
I'm excited about it.
Yeah.
I'm excited, but
where would you, just early in the process, the Bengals pick him. He starts from day one.
I already know where he's going to be. 15. Number 15 quarterback in fantasy.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So a number two guy that you will take, similar to what we would have said about, to what I would have said about Kyler Murray last year. Yeah. You know, somebody that you could take that has a chance to be a starter. It's contingent, I think, on AJ Green. You know, right. If AJ Green's there, changes
He'll
things a little bit. But I mean, I like the weapons. I like the skill set for that offense. And I think it's going to be a situation where he's going to throw a lot.
I will disagree and say that we didn't see anything today, because we did see something. We saw wide receivers who come in all shapes and sizes, and I cannot wait to watch these guys work out, because you got a sense for, if you're looking for big, we got big. We got T. Higgins. We got Chase Claypool. We have other guys who would fall in that category.
Claypool's going to become a tight end, though.
But I'm saying, maybe not. We don't know. I talked to someone who was in the know. They feel like maybe he a little bit overhydrated, drank too much water before the weigh-in.
Well, he drank a lot of water, then.
He drank a lot of water, but
still. This kid might be drowning.
I know this much. He is going to work out as a wide receiver, at least at this point. I did not hear word that he was going to do any tight end drills at this. So as of right now, we know he's going to do it.
Why wouldn't he become a move tight end?
Well, I'm not saying that he can't become a move tight end, but I don't think you want to necessarily do something like that if you haven't prepared for that, especially if they ask
you
certain blocking
plays,
drills.
You're a Notre Dame guy, of course. Yeah. Don't you think he plays move tight end on the next level?
No, I don't necessarily think that. I think
how many guys have made that move, though?
But right. What's he play in the NFL? What's he run?
Well, he would be your X. He would be your split.
What's
end.
He He'll run?
Be a wide receiver.
What's he run?
One vertical routes downfield. But I think that's also something that he can prove throughout this process is the ability to run a greater variety of routes.
At 238 pounds, he's going to be rolling down the field if he plays wide receiver.
You're distracting from the point, though, right? Because what we did see was you have Brandon Ayuk from your alma mater, Arizona State. I'm excited about him. Obviously, Henry Ruggs. We'll see how fast
it's
he wants
great
to run.
Class.
Henry Ruggs told me today he is going to break the record. That's what he said. He said that he's been testing and he feels like he's on a good pace. He'll be disappointed.
4-2-2?
Yes. He thinks he should be able to break that record.
I tell you what, when you put him on tape, you go, wow. Yeah. I just can't believe how he runs away from people.
It's 98 incredible. Catches in college, 24 of them went for touchdown.
It's amazing.
You know how many drops he had last season?
None, right?
One drop.
You know, it's interesting with this receiver
class.
Got
big hands, too.
If you compare it to last year, and last year's class was good for fantasy, obviously it's good for the NFL. The top two guys did very little by comparison to the guys that went on day two and day three. I mean, Marquise Brown had the foot injury, N'Keal Harry barely played. But A.J. Brown, star, you know, DK Metcalf came on second half of the season. Deebo Samuel, what he did, you know, sort of as a hybrid, running the ball, catching the ball. You know, McLaurin was, you know, it was funny coming out of the draft. I remember everybody saying, he's such a good blocker. And then he goes to Washington, he's their number one receiver, you know. So there's going to be guys that, you know, don't go in day one, in some cases day two, that are going to end up being good fits for teams in the, if they end up in the right situation.
Both those Ohio State kids, KJ Hill, Austin Mack, those guys will get drafted and they will show up and they will play out well.
You got 20 receivers in this draft class that's probably going to end up being productive players in
the draft. I would say 30.
We were walking down the street while Ryan was eating his fourth hamburger today. And I was walking with Van Jefferson. He was going to a meeting of some sort, I don't know. And, you know, for me, I was excited, you know, Gator, talking to him, and he, you know, he's got a chance to help a team.
Florida wide receiver.
Florida wide receiver.
I know his dad very well.
Well, because you're old, but, I think it's one of those things where he's another guy that, you know, is gonna be, well, certainly later, you know, he might be in the 30s in terms of receivers off the board.
No, he'll be before that.
I'm just, you know, right. Later in the process, that somebody who could be a difference maker for a team as well, just because he's a little bit older.
He's a great route runner, by the way.
He's fantastic.
Because his dad taught him. His dad was Sean Jefferson.
One of the best games I saw Van Jefferson play last year was against LSU, and he did some work against Stingley. And that's a fun game to watch if you want to go see what he can do. Brady mentioned talking to Henry Ruggs on the radio. We talked to him here on HQ, and he actually told us a story about. We talked to Tua, we talked to Burrow, we talked to Jerry Jeudy, and we talked to Henry about being fast, and he said the only way that Jerry Jeudy would agree to race him is if Jerry Jeudy got a head start. We asked Jeudy about it. He goes, absolutely. I was not going to run against him.
But Jeudy's a better player.
He told me another story, too. He said back in high school, because everyone knew he was pretty fast, the track coach came out and he said, hey, I want to maybe run. They're like, oh, we're good. We've got our 4x100 team. And his football coach was like, no, you should let him run, or at least, you know, try to go out and have him race against these guys, see how fast he is. So he goes ahead and he races all those guys 100 meters, obviously beats them. And then he basically said to the coach, no, you guys didn't want me in the first place, so I'm not going to do it. So he really doesn't have a formal track background, which is rare for a guy who's got that sort of speed. But I think he said the best he was timed out was like a 10-4, which is fast, but not that fast. At least not a guy that's going to equate to a 4-2-1 if he wants to beat John Ross's record.
By the way, have you seen the video of the Alabama receivers running the...
I asked him about any races, and he only mentioned one time he and Jalen Waddle tied a couple years ago.
There's one where they ran the 4x100-meter relay, and he anchors it, and he blows them. They ran the DBs. They raced against the DBs, and he blew them away. Yeah, and he could fly.
Absolutely.
He's going mid-first round easily.
I think you're right.
I'm with you.
By the way, we also have a bonus episode with all the people we talked to on Tuesday, so look out for that. And now, of course, we need to talk about Joe Burrow's tiny hands. You talked about him going 15th in terms of where you think he'll go fantasy-wise. What were your hands, Brady? You measured your hands today.
10 1/4.
And were they the same size they were?
I think they actually shrunk. Today they were like 10. I was like, oh, no.
So,
oh, you got it. Well, it's old age.
Yeah.
Tell me about it. Pew.
You know what it is? I think it's actually from gripping the phone so much. I don't think I have as much dexterity in my hand.
Here's what you do. You get your iPad as your phone, and you walk around like that.
There you go. Just palming it the whole time.
So last year, I actually told the story earlier today, Pete. Last year, the Senior Bowl, you sort of pissed off Drew Locke when you said, hey, how do you feel about those 9-inch hands you have? Because he had 9-inch hands. And what did he say to you?
No, I said to him, I said, you're going to get picked apart for having 9-inch hands. And he goes, yeah, I expect it. And he walked away from me a little bit. And he turned around and he said, Dan Marino had small hands.
And he knew how big of a fan you are of Dan Marino.
Maybe. Yeah. If Dan Marino had small hands, I would be a quarterback. I'd want to have small hands.
Did you see Jake Fromm's response to people talking about his small hands?
No, what did he say?
He said, yeah, these small hands that went to 3 straight SEC championship games.
Nice.
Well done.
You didn't point out the 4 misspelled words because his little fat fingers couldn't type.
like Mahomes sticking up for Joe Burrow, too.
So you don't have any issue. I don't think you cared about Drew Locke's hand size. I'm guessing you don't care about Joe Burrow's hand size.
No. Look, if you like he said before we were on set, if you can throw the football in the weather in college, and it's not an issue, it won't be an issue in the NFL. I like kidding around about small hands, like I called Sam Darnold baby hands for a while there. And so that would make Jake Fromm baby hands.
Yeah.
But no, I don't, you don't see anything that shows that they have problems holding the football. So no.
Well, I think the only thing that you'd be concerned with, because there is an element of, and people talk about this, well, Jake Fromm, and we talked about this, Jake Fromm, Joe Burrow both played in humid climates where the ball might be a little slick at times, but for the most part, they do a good job of keeping those things pretty dry. And even then, there's like a tackiness to them almost when they're in a humid climate. Well, when you go up north and you're in cold weather, that's when sometimes it's dry, it's cold. Those things do get a little bit slick. That's where you need a little bit more ability to cover surface area of the ball. And so if they do get drafted to a cold weather place, could that become an issue, especially when there's wind? Of course, especially if you don't spin the football well. So you know, well, but look, there's guys in this draft, for example, Jordan Love, who's got the biggest hand, I think, of what we saw measured today, 10 and a quarter, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, he doesn't necessarily spin the ball overly well or consistently well. So just because you have a big hand, too, doesn't necessarily equate to you being able to
spin
the football.
Does it help where you're from, too? I mean, like in Burrow's case, being from Ohio?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's adjusted to it. He's dealt with it before. There shouldn't be any concerns about him being able to go in.
But your hand size in high school wasn't the same as your hand size in the NFL. True?
Maybe it grew a little bit. I mean, I would think at most, I mean, I was 6'3 leaving high school. I think I became almost 6'4 by the time I was done with college. So it's not like my hand grew that much.
But okay, so let's say your hand was 9 and a half. Did you ever have problems holding the football in high school?
No.
No.
So, but you're also playing with a smaller ball.
Right, true. But I don't know. I just think that sometimes it's paralysis by analysis, yeah. Exactly what it is.
So Joe Burrow also put to rest any concerns where he's going to play next year. He said Cincinnati. He actually said specifically, I have a fire in my belly to play in Cincinnati, and pointed to Pete Prisco.
Well, that's good. He's got fire in his belly, Pete.
Well, he does. That kid has fire in his belly.
Okay.
But, Jamie, I want to ask you, did you care from a fantasy football perspective? Like, is this a better fit in Cincinnati? Because we just talked about the cold weather. Would have been. I mean, I would imagine he would have been better in Miami weather-wise, but he would have taken a beating. In terms of having the offensive line.
I like this fit. I really do. I think, you know, they'll be better on the offensive line with Jonah Williams being healthy, whatever they add to it this offseason. Keeping A.J. Green, if Pete's right, that would be huge in just adding a premier wide receiver. Hopefully he can stay healthy. Tyler Boyd, John Ross, if those guys stay on the field, it's going to be a good situation. What Joe Mixon did the second half of the season running the ball, he's got elite talent, you know. So this is a defense that's going to have to, I still think, put him in, or a defense that will put him in some situations where he's probably having to throw late, which will help his fantasy production. So I just like the setup for him. I don't know if there's another situation that could be better. Maybe Carolina could be better. Maybe Miami could be better. The Chargers could be, you know, teams that are going to be looking at quarterbacks. But this is as good as those, if not better. And so I just think he's got an opportunity to step in and be one of the better rookie passers that we've seen with great talent around him. When you're talking about 60 touchdowns in college, if any of that translates to the NFL, not the same numbers, clearly, but, you know, if he could be close to 30 touchdown passes, could he be close to 4,000 yards and limit the mistakes, that's going to put him in some pretty elite company right away.
I think it's a great situation for him. And I'm not...
Oh, we've talked about this.
I'm not just saying it's because of the Bengals, and I think that people have come down hard on the Bengals for no reason, but I think it's a great situation for a quarterback. You're going in with a second-year coach. You're going in with a veteran receiver in A.J. Green. Tyler Boyd is a hell of a number two receiver. And that running back in the last 8 games of the season, Joe Mixon, was as good as any in the league. You get Jonah Williams back. I told Zach Taylor today, I said, you guys and your line coach should be anointed for sainthood for getting Bobby Hart to play the way he did, because that guy was a spinning top, and he played pretty good last year. They like their center. They have a young left guard that started last year as a rookie.
Michael Jordan.
They have a group of guys that are going to develop into a good offense. It's a great situation for Joe Burrow.
And we saw it with, you know, John Ross last year when he stayed healthy. He's the type of guy that gives you cheap touchdowns, you know, because you get those big plays that you can't, you know, the yards after catch, the things you can't account for with some other players.
Do you have any faith in John Ross in 2020?
If he's healthy.
If he's healthy.
It's always if he's healthy.
Yes. You know, him and Will Fuller, I kind of put those two guys together, because if we ever saw 16 games, you could just see, I don't want to say astronomical stats, but you could see some pretty mind-blowing numbers from those two guys on minimal catches, huge yards, you know, huge yards per catch, you know, just based on what they're capable of doing with their speed. And Ross had two great games to open the season last year, and then everything fell apart for him because, once again, he got hurt.
And his ability to stretch the field puts a fear in a defense.
Now, so can Burrow be the type of guy to throw it down there?
Oh,
Zach Taylor was asked about this. You know, he's like, are you any concerned about his arm strength? And he goes, how many times do you actually see a guy drop back and throw the ball 70 yards down the field?
Right. You know, no, I mean, it's very rare.
Right.
And Brady, we've talked about his arm strength. You think it's good enough?
Yeah, there's no concerns with that. Look, if I'm going to be realistic, am I concerned about looking at their track record and looking at the organization and saying, is it the best place for him to go? Of course not, but he doesn't have a say in it, right? They're number one. They've got the pick. If they want to take him, he's going to be their guy. And
The best place for him?
Well, I think you'd say the Kansas City Chiefs or any other team.
But his other option would be Miami. Is that a better place for him?
Well, you don't necessarily know. It could be Carolina if they had traded up.
Is that a better place for him?
That's what I'm saying. It's like I think they're all, you know, okay, this is a 10 and that's an 8, and this is a 7 and that's a 6. You know, it's like you're splitting hairs.
Yeah, it's varying degrees, but I do think you could look at other situations or organizations and say, yeah, is Carolina probably a better organization? Yeah, I'd be willing to go out on a limb and say they're a better organization than how Cincinnati has been. They've got the smallest scouting department in the NFL.
But they draft well.
But those
in your opinion, I don't know. I can tell you this much: from being from the state of Ohio, there's a lot of Bengals fans that don't feel like they have drafted.
Well, they're wrong because in the last 5 years they've done a pretty good job.
Your opinion?
In the last five years they've done a good job of drafting.
In the years where they went to the playoffs and couldn't win a playoff game, they put themselves in position to get there. However it worked out, and if Joe Burrow presumably is better than Andy Dalton, and he takes them,
yeah, you should be able to take them
a win, two wins, whatever.
But this team's obviously kind of far removed from that, like, five-year stretch.
A thousand percent. This is the start of it, though.
Sure, but the other point I'd make is, if you look at the division that he's going to, you'd make the case that he's going up against at least two of the best defenses in the AFC, in Baltimore and Pittsburgh. Right? He's got to play them twice a year.
Oh, they're the third team then, best.
No, I'm not talking about, like, where they rank. I'm just talking about,
as a
if you're looking at it from a fantasy standpoint, a quarterback facing defenses, those two are two of maybe the best.
Sure.
And then you've got to go up against Cleveland, which, look, they're getting Myles Garrett back. It should be an improved defense. To what degree,
it's
I don't know.
If he goes there and wins,
and he goes there and becomes what they think he can become, then he'll do for the Cincinnati Bengals what Russell Wilson and the defense did for the Seattle Seahawks.
What did Carson Palmer do for
which
the
is
Bengals?
Make him relevant.
And that's the legitimate question I would ask, Ryan. I think it's a great question.
What did he do?
I mean, is he going to be better than Carson Palmer?
He got hurt.
No. What did he do for the city of Cincinnati with all that winning?
They probably would have won the playoff game and had a chance to go to the Super Bowl that year. He got hurt.
But you're making it sound like Joe Burrow is going to save Cincinnati from itself. I'm just wondering what are you saving him from?
I don't think he's making that case. I don't think he's made that case. I think, you know, if you're Cincinnati, you're hopeful that they're in the same scenario that they were with Dalton and Marvin Lewis, where they're making the playoffs.
Oh, yeah. Now, that I agree.
And
the hope
would be is that the Taylor-Burrow combination takes them further.
All the people that look at that team as being irrelevant.
Get off Mike Brown's payroll.
What are you talking about? I'm not on anybody's part. I'm a realist. That's what I was worried about. I had to run away from that.
If you look at what he had at LSU and what allowed him to take that monumental leap, right? It was a great system that Joe Brady helped come in particular on third down this year. Their offensive line was the best offensive line in college football. They're going to have potentially.
I heard they had the best receivers in college football, too.
They're right up there, right?
They're good. They're not Alabama.
Jamar Chase will.
We just talked about Henry Ruggs and how great he was, so they're clearly not the best.
Hey, let me ask quickly because
Thaddeus Moss. I mean, the only reason I bring that up is he's not going to have as good of a group with the Bengals. There'll be a good group.
What are you talking about?
So Brady, did you?
Which one of those receivers is better than AJ Green?
No,
Baby Brinson's got to get through the podcast.
You're not understanding the point. But is AJ Green? Would you make the case that AJ Green, Tyler Boyd, and John Ross are three of the best in the NFL?
No, but he's a better. It's got a better receiving situation than for the NFL. His receiving situation is better than it was at LSU.
No chance. The combination of Jamar Chase, Justin Jefferson, Terrace Marshall, and Thaddeus Moss
is better than AJ Green and Tyler Boyd and John Ross if he's healthy.
Yes.
No. What Brady's saying is
those guys in college and where they would rank.
That's one of the best.
In comparison,
AJ Green is all the way back.
But they're at best. You know, they're a top 10 unit. LSU's a top 5 unit.
Okay.
Comparatively speaking, offensive line, same thing. You went from the best in college football to
Right. Running back, where's the running back?
Jonah Williams.
Okay,
there's a reason.
The running back isn't as good as the running back.
Clyde Edwards-Helaire?
Okay. He's not as good as.
Hey, he's my, hey, he's my little sleeper for the
Brady,
running back.
Brady, 10 seconds on this one. Take a quick break, and we'll talk about two and the other quarterbacks. You didn't throw the combine because you were injured. Is that right?
I had a torn PCL. I didn't want to make publicize that, but that was part of it. Yeah,
you didn't throw.
You were hiding injuries like an NFL guy, even in college.
Well, here's the dumb thing: is looking back,
like a typical member of the media,
what was stupid about it is you really like back then. You know, I tore my PCL in the bowl game.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that big of a deal. If I would have just been open about it, it wouldn't have affected my draft stock. Obviously, I dropped the draft anyway, and it wouldn't have, and people would have been probably more understanding of why I wasn't throwing in the first place.
Do you care that Burrow didn't throw, or is
no,
not
I don't
going
care
to
at
throw?
All. I don't care at all about that. I think it's he had the greatest season I've ever seen from a college quarterback, maybe
right.
of any player. I don't know what else he has to prove.
Pete, you said this is your 26th combine.
Yes,
I'm guessing you would have cared 20 years ago. Burrow didn't throw. You probably don't care now.
Back in the day, you probably cared a little more because the pro days weren't that big a deal back then like they are now. You didn't have all this training in the off season like you do now. I mean, these guys get schooled on this entire process for two
right.
months. You know, that's why when they go to an interview, before your combine process, did you go get schooled by the interview techniques and all that by the?
I don't know that we had someone who came in and spoke to us like as a group, but we didn't have anyone sit down one on one. Now these guys have. Someone who comes in, they spend 4 hours with
them.
It's
crazy.
And they go through almost like they're preparing for a trial. Like, literally, they have to defend anything in their past, anything they've done or that's out there. They will have someone come in and dig stuff up, and they will put them on the stand and basically grill them and work on how they're going to respond
to
those questions.
And then you go to a training facility?
Yeah, of course.
You did? But
yeah.
Back 20 years ago, they
right.
never did that.
Yeah.
Ever. And this became a new thing. And
well, you can't say 20 years ago. You have to say probably 30. Like, you're getting so old that you don't remember. Like, 20 years ago, like, I was probably just getting ready to enter college. So, like, yeah, they still had this back then. It was probably 30 years ago, Pete.
30 years ago. Nobody did that.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about the rest of the quarterbacks.
20.
Starting with Tua Tagovailoa.
I'm Trey Wingo. And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's the butterfly effect for real.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
All right, so Tua is going to expect to be cleared on March 9th, his pro day April 9th. Like, realistically, what are we going to see on April? I don't know what he's going to be able to do and what teams are going to be able to be impressed with on April 9th. Do you guys have any thoughts?
Go throw. If he's cleared.
But he can't throw. Like, what if his hips?
Then why are you having a? Then he doesn't throw at the pro day. He goes has a special day later on in the process.
I'm more curious about how much later can it be.
You don't have much time.
I'm more curious about what he's doing right now. You know, if he
soft
gets cleared
or something.
Gets cleared at March 9th, which is relatively soon, to be full or clear, whatever that means. I mean, is a month's time even enough for him to adjust to the atrophy that's happened in his hip? You know, adjusting to however his hip feels too, from a pain threshold standpoint. And is that going to compromise his throwing motion? That's one of the things that you love about him, is his compact release, and he's got enough zip, makes all the throws. So I wonder what he's doing now. I wonder, you know, from the 9th to the April 9th.
NFL or college-level throws right now, but he's probably throwing enough.
He's probably soft-tossing to some degree.
So he's moving around fine. Like, you know, you watch him walk around here.
Yeah, he's walking
fine.
He's
not running, you know, obviously.
No,
but, right, there's no...
Are you concerned about him getting hit?
Yeah.
Well, I would say this. his pro day doesn't matter as much to me. I'm more concerned about the private workouts, because the private workouts that will test you more.
Push them?
Well, they won't push. They won't, can't touch you like that, but they will test you as far as your change of direction. And that's where, like, you know, you can pull something or you can twist something or have an issue when a coach introduces a drill that you haven't prepared for, haven't rep before. That's where, like, when it's unfamiliar to you, you can have some injuries.
But if you draft him, he let's just say he has his pro day and does okay and throws the football, and you draft him, are you holding your breath every single time he takes a shot on that hip?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
See, so what, let me ask you this.
Until he takes one and then gets back up and nothing's wrong.
But even if he takes one and gets back up, is there a chance that number two or number three...
Look, he's had enough injury history. Anytime he lays on the ground a little bit too long or anytime he gets hit, I would be concerned.
Is that a product of brittle bones, bad luck? What's the reason for
it? He told me today when we spoke that with his ankle surgeries that he has, is that actually long-term, he should be better off that he got the surgery. So he looked at that as it won't be problematic moving on in the future, at least as far as the ankle injuries.
So what if he isn't cleared April 9th to do everything he needs to do football-wise? The draft rolls around.
And he still hasn't thrown yet?
Well, he's thrown, but he can't run the three-cone drill or something.
Right. No, but let's just say by April 9th, he can't do an NFL workout.
Yeah.
Passing the football, like doing all the drills, rolling
out. You're investing in the film. You're investing in the player you saw.
Okay, so what if he's there at number 13 and you're the Colts? Are you drafting them?
If he gets the 13, then that's a problem.
I think the Colts are going to go after Rivers.
My point is that what if Tua is there in the middle of the first round and your team needs a quarterback?
If your team needs a quarterback, like, okay.
He's not getting past 7.
But what if we don't know all the details about his health?
But I think if you're a team, like, I mean, Miami can play it out. The Chargers can play it out. The Panthers can play it out. I mean, those are three teams that can let him sit a year.
What if he's not ready? My point is, like, what if the hips...
What if he's never ready is what you're saying?
But yeah.
I don't think that's the case, though.
If you have enough information,
if he doesn't
to know
have
he's ready,
the Bo Jackson injury, I think he'll be able to play.
Okay. I don't know that. I mean, look, his injury happened in, what, November?
Yep.
I don't think he'd be walking the way he's walking
if it was Bo Jackson
right
injury.
If it was Bo Jackson or if
I
it
agree.
Was that bad.
Okay. All right. Well, you guys feel good about it. All right.
You don't?
So I'm just nervous knowing that it was a really serious injury. And although the reports initially after the surgery were good, you can't really tell. The three-month checkup was great, so that's great news for him.
He broke both
fractures.
Ankles?
Oh, right. No, I don't know if he broke them.
Well, high ankle sprains, which I don't know the severity.
They had surgery of both of them, right?
Right.
So he had those. Then he also broke his nose on that play.
Yeah, and he broke his finger in practice.
I mean, this guy's brittle.
Because he broke his nose? Pete, you've broken your nose many times getting punched in the face.
I broke my nose playing basketball, actually.
Was that how?
Yeah.
I thought someone sucker punched you at a bar.
No, and I had surgery with the quarterback
room?
On my football team the same day, and he got punched in the face with a motorcycle helmet.
Did he recover from broken fire in the belly, though?
No.
There you go.
No.
So, speaking of fire in the belly, there are a bunch of other quarterbacks here. Jamie, I'll start with you in terms of fantasy impacts of guys like Justin Herbert, Jordan Love, we talked about. Jacob Eason's another strong arm guy. Is there anything that you take away from this week watching these guys? Probably not throwing in shorts and t-shirts, but just in terms of projecting when you start drafting these guys for fantasy purposes.
There won't be another guy drafted, most likely, fantasy-wise this year. You know, just because, again, Burrow's going to walk into a starting job. Tua may walk into a starting job, maybe Justin Herbert, but you know, I don't. For me, I just don't look at him as a fantasy caliber quarterback. Now, I would have said the same thing about Daniel Jones from his even after he was drafted, because I thought Eli would play it out a little bit longer. So I wasn't going to draft Daniel Jones because I knew Eli was going to start the season. But as we saw, Daniel Jones had some great moments. You know, once we got that Week 3 game against Tampa Bay, it was like, oh, he could play. And not only can he play, he's got great talent around him. You know, it's a similar conversation to Joe Burrow. He walked into a situation where Sterling Shepard, Golden Tate, Evan Ingram, Saquon Barkley, that's a dream for,
right.
You know, skill position players. And so, you know, if Herbert ends up in one of those situations, maybe Jordan Love, you know, once you get past those guys, though, I don't think we're going to see anybody go in as a starting NFL quarterback, let alone a starting fantasy quarterback.
So, Brady, I know you love Jacob Eason. Is there anyone you're particularly interested in seeing this week do sort of separate themselves after maybe ups and downs during the college football season?
Yeah, I think Eason's an interesting one because he only has 1 year starting, and you know you're going to notice the velocity on his ball in comparison to everyone else, and that's kind of like very similar to kind of what we saw with Josh Allen. When you saw Josh Allen throw at the combine, you go, "Holy cow!" And I remember him throwing those deep balls, and it felt like the ball was in the air forever. Eason has the ability to impress you with that and wow you with that, and I think if he, you know, ends up throwing well for whatever that means in t-shirt and shorts. It goes a long way in kind of just reaffirming that, hey, he's got one of the strongest arms in the draft. He could be one of those guys you're looking at in the second, third round to be a guy that can come in eventually or maybe be the guy to take over at some point in his rookie season.
Aren't you looking forward to Nate Stanley hitting the wall about eight times?
So, Pete, I got a request. They want Debo wants to hear your thoughts on Jordan Love.
I said before, I watched two of his games on tape yesterday, and there is a lot to like about him.
Have you ranked your quarterbacks yet, or you haven't gotten to that point?
I mean, if I had to do it right now, it would be Burrow 1, and a clear 1 in my book.
Yeah.
2 of 2. Probably Herbert 3, although I don't love him.
I know.
I don't love him. And probably Love right there with him.
The thing that I like about Love is he plays the position. He's got kind of a feel for it. It's different when you watch Herbert.
Fire in the belly?
I don't know about fire in the belly.
but it's effortless at times with him.
Yeah, he can just play. He's an athlete. He can play. And you look at Herbert and it just feels mechanical. It feels robotic. It feels like he's feeling his way through it. And maybe that has to do with the system. Maybe
it
doesn't.
And you talk about his running ability. And I remember sitting there watching the Rose Bowl, and everybody was going nuts about, look at Herbert running the football and everything. That's not what I wanted to see. I wanted to see him go back and make throws. And well, accurate throws.
He did enough of that, I think. I think the difference between him and Love is, if you want a guy who can shave throws, Love can do that to a degree. He can fit balls in windows. He'll take a chance doing that. Herbert has to wait for that guy to get to the window. He throws a very flat ball. So he's got a deep ball, which is pretty flat, and then he's got essentially his quick passing game. The intermediate routes, to me, is where he really struggles, unless he's thrown to the outside where a guy's isolated.
When a guy's 6'5" or whatever, he's
every bit of 6'6",
and he's got that arm, you know that's everything and anything normally what I want to see in a quarterback,
yeah.
And I don't see it. I just don't
By the way,
see
Pete,
you
talk about Tua with fire in the belly. I think you ascribe that to Justin Herbert as well. Can you explain that to the podcast listeners who haven't been around you for the last month?
Yeah, what does fire in the belly mean?
Fire in the belly means when I ask you a question that I normally would expect an answer from a quarterback that would have fire in the belly. And I'll give you a perfect example. I asked Tua if he had played the rest of the season, would he have come around and won the national championship? And his answer was, I don't know. We have a lot of circumstances, everything. And I want to hear the quarterback say, you're damn right I would have. And I actually told Burrow that when I was talking to him. And Burrow said, well, you know, we beat him when he was playing. That's fire in the belly. It's a little jab to show you that I'm better than him. And I'm willing to put it out there.
It's a competitiveness.
Yes, a drive, a desire, a want to.
Did you have that, Brady? Do you have fire in the belly?
I mean, I think every quarterback.
Not every quarterback.
Oh, come on.
Well, that makes this level opposite to some degree. Whether or not they display it to you is different.
But Brady,
because you have to understand
it.
The position he's in. He's here at the combine. He knows every single thing he says is being monitored and watched. So he's probably a little cautious about saying
this. This was at the Super Bowl, but I get it. Every quarterback who gets to this level is truly special on a certain level. But there's some that are different. And others, it's like pizza. There really is no such thing as awful pizza. There's just some that's a lot better than others. I mean, you'd rather eat a bad.
I disagree with that.
A bad frozen pizza is better than Brussels sprouts.
Which ties in Jordan Love. We spoke to Darwin Thompson at the Super Bowl, and I asked him about, is his role going to change from his rookie year? We didn't do very much, even when Damian Williams was out, to his second year. And he said, everybody on this level is an amazing athlete. The thing that separates the amazing athlete from being good to great is what you do in the classroom and studying and do all these other things to make yourself better. And so I think it's kind of the same thing. It's like you want to see somebody that's taking that great athlete and want to step on the next guy's throat to get to the king's chair. And I think like what you're getting from Tua is not that killer instinct.
Correct.
That fire in the belly.
I could be way off. This is
well, I heard you say this, Brady, the fact that he came back from the two ankle injuries.
Yeah,
and
he came
back
really to fight his
like
way
back. Like his actions.
Did he not have the killer instinct when he beat out Jalen Hurts, who was the Heisman runner-up this year?
But we've seen guys come back from injury and they don't have the killer instinct. They just come back from injury.
Right, he may be going through those motions, the psychological part of the injury.
Unnecessarily. I think, right, coming in this year, you say no doubt he's a first-round pick, right? And he put himself in a situation where he got an ankle surgery that he really didn't need. At that point in the time of the season, he could have thrown in the towel. He could have waited 4 to 6 weeks. Didn't need to rush back. He rushed back to play in a 1-versus-2 game. And he did not look healthy by the end of that game, even before he hurt his hip. He looked like he was starting to
labor. I'm in the minority on this one, too. When he took over for Jalen Hurts.
I'll stop it.
And they interviewed Jalen Hurts on the sideline, and he seemed thrilled with the whole idea of winning national championship. There's no fire in the belly. I wanted to see him go, I should have been playing. They yanked me out in the middle of the damn game. I'm the starting quarterback. I'm not happy about that.
I'm sure he
Why
wasn't
would you be happy about that?
Again, this ties in Marino. Right. Because Marino, the
had
ultimate,
the ultimate fire,
fire
in the belly.
All right, well, that is...
look at Brady rolling his eyes.
We're going to have to come back tomorrow. Yeah. Pete will be
it
here,
always
thankfully.
Goes back to Danny.
And tomorrow, Pete, you can talk more about fire in the belly. I'm sure people will have a response.
I think it's because Pete eats too much chili. That's why he has fire in the belly.
Yeah, that would be fire somewhere else.
So, yeah, tomorrow's Wednesday. The defensive backs are going to be here. They're going to get measured weighed. We'll be talking about that. And we'll have the podcast again tomorrow, Wednesday night. So come back for that. That is the wrap.
Richard,
on the
come back again.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus. Gather your besties.
We are very exclusive.
And get ready.
Mom, go make snacks.
For sure, Regina. Yeah.
For the movie that hits like a bus. In a good way.
No one died.
Mean Girls. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.